Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Alex here. Just a quick one before we begin to say that this isn't actually a new episode. For Mental Health Awareness Week, we remastered parts of a previous episode where we spoke about our journeys through mental health. Please enjoy the next 25 or so minutes of us speaking candidly after eating six packs of sushi from the reduced section of Tesco. And yes, don't worry, new episodes are coming soon. All right, theme music.
Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? The only podcast that uses cutting-edge science to answer the questions that you actually have. Things like, why is the sky blue? What's up with trees? And, you, this boy, you can be depressed. Hey, with your life, you will see depression when I send you back to enter country of choice. On my left, as always, I have Oz Ismail. Oz is a PhD student in neuroimaging and dementia, a Tinder aficionado, and once dated a meth head.
That is all true. I came off Grindr onto Tinder.
Are you ever going to tell us a story about the meth head? Because it's 2018. We want to know.
I feel like I'll break it gently, episode by episode.
We got the long haul for this, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on my right, as always, I have Suhail Patel. Suhail is a cutting-edge journalist. He makes beautiful films and videos for the BBC. And he knows a lot about science.
All lies.
Okay, but you've...
I'm sure we taught you some stuff.
No, because we've been getting complaints about people saying you're picking on Sahel. So I don't want to be that. I don't want to have that. I'm not picking on Sahel. Sahel and I have been friends for a very long time.
Okay. He called me his best friend today. So,
I did.
You fucking wasted.
I'm sorry.
I thought we were.
Don't feel betrayed.
I feel betrayed.
He has enough love to share.
I do. Everyone's my best friend. That's just how I roll.
So guys, we haven't put a podcast out in a while, and I'll tell you why. It's because I've been fucking depressed. Just, I lost all motivation to do anything over Christmas, and it bled into January. And yeah, it's been, sometimes I get that way. Do you guys ever have...
Don't be sad, Alex.
Oh, that's... Yeah, so tell someone when they're dealing with mental health issues. Nah, fam, just don't be sad.
Don't be sad. Let me cheer you up.
Don't be my parents about this.
Kate Hopkins told people who are depressed to go for a run.
Nah. That'll cheer you up.
No, but seriously, guys, have you guys ever dealt with mental health issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I've suffered from depression in the past. Just last year, I had quite a lot of anxiety issues. And yeah, like you say, it comes and goes. Sometimes you have good days, sometimes you have bad days. Yeah, how about you, Suhail?
Yeah.
Thinking
about it makes me sad.
No, but it's interesting. So like...
For real, it's a serious issue. And talking about anxiety and stuff and getting depressed, you know, I think a lot of us deal with that silently. And it's a big issue in society.
Yeah, like for instance, so the most recent stats from Mind suggest that 5.9 in 100 people suffer from anxiety in England alone.
Mm.
And then for depression, it's 3.3 in 100 people.
Mm.
And then the next most common thing is phobias, OCD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So it is.
So Sahel, out of all the people I know, you are possibly one of the most laid back. Do you ever suffer from mental health issues?
Well, I think, like I said, man, it's everything that we all go through at different times in our life. And like I was saying, it could be triggered by anything. For me personally, it could be something like a girl, like women related, for example. It could be professional workplace related. You know, for example, the last month, I've been feeling really stressed out at work. And I've been getting a lot of anxiety about work. And you know, I think that's a common thing. I think there's some statistics on it. You know, up to 500,000 of us have workplace anxiety and stress. And you know, it could be little things. You know, I'm a straightforward guy. Like, you know, I'm really, I'm quite sincere with how I handle people. And sometimes the politics of the workplace can get me feeling down. You know, the long hours of work. But one of the things I've learned is, you know, to embrace that anxiety. And I think, you know, Ozzy, you just touched upon that. It's like, you know, we all get stress and anxiety in our lives, and making room for that and, you know, trying to understand that has helped me a lot, I guess.
So yeah. do you ever, like, do you ever go to counselling?
Me, I've never been to, like, official counselling. Like, I do a lot of stuff, like, I keep a journal, for example.
Yeah?
Yeah, that I write in, and it's always about women, by the way, just to...
So do you find journaling helps?
I find being able to contextualise your problems and put them in, like, a, for example, in a journal where you can read back on them, I think it gives you a lot of, like, clarity, gives you perspective on your problems and your issues, and that can be very helpful. Like, whether that's writing in a journal or talking to someone professional, I think perspective is really helpful with trying to put your own problems into context, not only in your own life, but, you know, help you keep your big eyes on the bigger picture sometimes, for me anyway, for it has. Talking about depression, like, we talk about seasonal, like, what's a seasonal
affective disorder
and depression, how would you clinically, what's the difference between having, like, being a little bit sad or being, like, full-on depressed? Like, what is the distinction?
So seasonal affective disorder, if I understand this correctly, is purely based on people suffering from low mood at a certain point
in the year,
based on the fact that there's not enough sunlight, and that's what triggers it, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas depression is not triggered in that way. Mm. There's so many different reasons why people become depressed.
Yeah. Do you know, it's funny because sometimes, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, you know, your mood can switch quite suddenly. Something can affect you and just take you to that place, can't it? Like, you know, it might be a girl not texting you back, or something at work, and that can just trigger you to take you to that place sometimes, don't you think? Like,
oh yeah, completely. Like, I'm doing a PhD, and for people that aren't doing a PhD and therefore have made good life choices, what a PhD essentially is imagine being on a desert island.
Yeah.
And you're on a desert island, and you're trying to build, like, a rocket ship out of sand.
Yeah.
And you're completely alone. And every so often, a person comes out of a trap door and just says, "You're shit," and then goes away. Imagine that for, like, 3 years, 5 years if you're in the US.
That's very
and
sad.
And that is essentially, so yeah, that's PhD.
But that's a good point. It's like, well, life wears you down.
Oh,
that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Completely. And I thought, like, so growing up in a West African household, I was always brought up to think that depression or even mental health issues were the problem that only the affluent had, or only, you know, white people had these problems. It was a problem that you had when you had time to be existential and weren't thinking about just survival.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because so from my sort of family background, the Asian background that I come from, it was, I think people acknowledge that depression and anxiety and all these mental health issues exist. They just don't talk about it because it's seen as a reason to be ashamed. So shame is attached to all of these mental health conditions.
Mm.
So you're not allowed to talk about it. It's improving now for sure. But I remember when I was growing up, and my family have a lot of different types of mental health issues through different parts of the family.
Mm.
And all of that was so hush hush. And I remember just, like, either read up about stuff that was happening myself, or, like, only find out about it when I was much, much older.
Mm.
And there's definitely a certain element of don't talk about it, it's shameful. And that affected me when I was depressed when I first moved to the UK, for many reasons, because I thought I was not allowed to talk about it because it's not something that affects brown people.
That's true. I think, you know, in ethnic minority communities, some of them, especially Asian ones, where there's a big her, like it's a big issue, like family honor and stuff like that, and keeping up appearances. You know, you have this thin veneer of like everything's okay, but I think, you know, you're right, like looking at it in context, like a lot of us do get these mental health issues and we should be open and discuss them. And you know, for example, with my older brother, he's been depressed a lot. Like I can tell he's got the symptoms, but he won't ever admit it. And you know, partly that's to do with honor, partly it's to do with like this pseudo kind of machoism where it's like, you know, I'm you know, there's nothing wrong with me, for example. But if people were more willing to discuss it and be open about it, then, you know, it helps to have that support network around you to discuss issues and stuff.
And the thing is, because of that stigma, so I have members of my family who suffer from depression very badly at the moment, and they refuse to take any medication because, like in the past, they've grown up in this environment where they've seen other people take medication and be branded as crazy. And so for that reason, they refuse to take medication and they don't take care of themselves because they're not actually addressing the issue.
Yeah.
So for me, a lot of my mental health issues relate to the fact that I have epilepsy. I got diagnosed sort of quite late in life. And generally, if you get diagnosed with like a chronic illness, especially if you're a minor, you're meant to do like counseling, like from the start.
Right.
Yo, my parents did not do that. They were like, oh, what?
And you? Why was that?
No, they come from Ghana, where, you know, if you have epilepsy, if you have, you know, disease like this, it's not, you aren't always going to be able to get the medication. So think about that. Like, if that's your baseline, if that's your baseline where you, you're in a place where actually, if you have these sort of long-term chronic conditions, that could be, you know, depending on your luck in life, you know, how affluent you are, your access to these sorts of medicines, you know, that could be you done. But considering that, you know, you've, and that's your baseline, and now you're in the UK, and then you see your child has, you know, this chronic disorder, and they're able to get medication like that, see the doctor like that, do anything like, you know, like that, and life isn't disrupted. Yo, they are fucking fine. They're, they're like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's great. Life is great for you. But me, my baseline is very much the UK. So I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah,
right.
Also, I'm the one having seizures.
It's like context, isn't it?
It's complete context. Yeah. But I was meant to have, like, generally you're meant to have counseling. And I did not have that. So I only started doing that last year. Yo.
How's it been?
Okay, let me tell you what happened in the beginning. This is a saga.
Shit, this is, I'm about to get comfortable.
Yeah, no.
This story, go. All right,
so people listening at home, get comfortable. This, all right, so this has, this is a three act structure. I start from the beginning. So I was like, okay, I went to my GP. GP's really good because I went there, I said, I need a same day appointment. It got me one. I was like, yes, it's great. And I went there and I was like, okay, I need to make something up, because I can't just rock up and be like, yep, I've got mental health issues. So I started off doing a quick 5-minute thing about like toenail fungus. I was like, I think I got a weird growth in my toenail, but it turned out that I actually did have a weird growth in my toenail. But like, look, that's a non-story. Anyway, like, so eventually I said, you know, I'm having sort of mental health issues. Yeah. And you talk about it. And they were really good. They said, okay, we don't do it in-house, but we have someone that comes in externally. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, it's really great. They said, all you have to do to make an appointment is call them. I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. So they wrote a number down. I was like, okay, they wrote the number down and they said, you know, give them a call and then make the appointment through there and then you have it here. I was like, okay, great. So I do it. I go home and I leave for a couple of days because I'm like, I'm trying to psych myself up. And then I call them. I call them and I get no response. I was like, okay, it's a bit weird. Called them again and someone sort of picks up and it's sort of like quite garbled and I couldn't hear it. But I had like a really shitty phone at the time. You ever have that? Like when you, you know, when you ring up and you're like.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My phone is terrible.
Yeah, Blake's,
yeah. Like this, I'm on this Blake cheap phone.
Motorola Razr.
Yeah, I'm on this super old Razr phone. You get this sort of garbled noise. And I was like, okay. And then I called them up again and I get an answering machine. And so I'm like,
I immediately would hang up at that stage.
So I was like, okay, got answering machine, that's good. You know, it was after 5 o'clock, so I was like, fine. No, and so I left my name, my like number, and like reasons why I called, which is what you generally meant to do. And then I left it, and then I was like, they haven't called me back. Also, this is a bit weird. And so I tried calling again, didn't get anyone, didn't even get an answering machine, and then I googled the number.
So who were you calling? Yeah,
so
all no. Right.
Who do you think it was? Just give me some guesses.
It's going to be like some department store.
Boris Johnson.
An ex.
Your
university.
Pizza Hut.
Turns out that when I wrote the number into my phone, I mixed up two of the numbers.
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
I did not call a therapist. I called Bristol's prime Greek restaurant.
No way.
There is a place in Bristol right now
that knows all
of my mental health history, knows all of my
and
neuroses.
Make good Greek food?
They make amazing fucking food. I can never go there. All right. Do you know how fucking difficult it is? Now, right now, I've been conditioned now. So anytime I go to counseling, and I do it now, I do it through my university. Anytime I go counseling and come out, I'm fucking conditioned. I want some halloumi cheese.
I was gonna say, like,
no, actually, you made it fucking worse. What made it fucking worse was I had people like in my group chat, and I told them about this. And you think people in your group chat are gonna be nice and sensitive to your mental health issues? No, because all of my friends are comedians.
Oh, what did they say?
They're like, oh, was it therapy from a Greek restaurant? You should be souvlaki.
Or, oh, no.
Don't worry, Alex. Things will get fatter.
I love a good food pun.
I mean, I'm all for a good pun.
I fucking hate these people.
I love cheese.
No, but I think I'm just saying, like, even though going through all that, think about how funny that is. That is a journey through mental health. That's a journey through like finding your place.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever like done counseling or gone through that?
Many times, yeah. So when for me, like you say, the first time I went for counselling, it was a very difficult step to take because I've been conditioned to not acknowledge my mental health because it was at the time a shameful thing to say that you were going through. So I made appointments. I would not turn up or cancel. I was at uni at the time, so I would just ring up and I'll say I need some help. But then I would like cancel or not turn up to the appointment. It took a lot for me to actually finally go and actually talk about the stuff that was bothering me. And the only way I can describe it, and I continued to do it for many years, and the only way I can describe it was like taking a box full of all my mind junk and turning it upside down, emptying it on the floor, and then recategorizing stuff from your past. Like it's very textbook, like from past childhood, hopes and fears, like everything was just mixed up and I just had to empty it out and then start to recategorize them in different places. I'm not saying that fixed everything, like even last year I was in therapy for various reasons, but what it did was what I learned from the process is go to therapy because it helps so much and forget about or like try and overcome any kind of stigma that you're conditioned to feel because that's once you get past that, the stigma is bullshit.
Also, yeah, wise words. I think that is yeah. really like it's really true. But I will say something hilarious because I'm doing my PhD in Bath. All of the therapists are like from Bath and the surrounding area. It's very difficult to explain the Black London experience to yeah. a woman from like Somerset.
But this is interesting because it's like all like for example, like my therapists. Most of them, yeah, have been white women. Mm. And sometimes, at the beginning especially, I found it really difficult to, like, explain to them this kind of Asian experience I was having.
Mm.
But, of course, they were brilliant therapists and they kind of helped me so much. But I think you're right. Sometimes it's hard to get across why you're struggling to even talk about something.
Yeah. Try and tell my therapist, like, you know, I'm struggling to find my place in the world and at the same time, like, put that together with the idea that I don't believe in any sort of religion. You know, I don't have that blind faith, but at the same time, I want to feel part of something greater. And I'm lacking that. And she sort of said, "Well, you know, you." She said to me, "So you lack that faith? Have you know, have you told your parents about this?" I was like, "Ah, what? My sister, you want me to die?"
It's like, damn.
Like, what? You want? Yeah. You want them to kill me?
Look, so this is the other thing. So like I had a similar experience with talking about my sexuality because that was one of the when I first moved to the UK. That was one of the many reasons why I was struggling.
You know when you go to like a hot country and you get off the plane and that warm air hits you.
I mean, my hair was crazy.
The idea that you came off that plane from Bahrain and just you take. Like fucking Sailor Moon transformation. Yeah,
just to come out fabulous. Just like...
fabulous. Literally no frizz.
Just like on the plane, you were like perfectly closeted. And then as soon as you walked out, bam!
Yeah,
bam.
Rainbows shot out of the air.
Just unicorns and all type of shit.
That's what I like to think that was my experience. But yeah. No, seriously, like it was very difficult to talk to someone because I was not used to talking about sex, let alone sexuality. Mm. So it was so difficult and you were taught... especially from where I came from, like to not talk about sex and sexual stuff.
Yeah.
So it was so difficult to like even open that door and like be like, you know, I am experiencing this thing and I want to talk about it, but I don't know how, and I don't know how to connect with you because it's difficult on so many levels, you know?
In a way you must have felt quite trapped in that during that time before you had the outlet to talk about this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite isolated.
I was going to say, like, when I've never gone through something like that because, again, like, my dad was a gynecologist. So if there's one thing I learned by the age of 11, if not my 9 times tables, it's what a vulva was. So what's it like not being able to talk about sex and stuff?
So it's very... So I was... It's very...
Sorry, I'm laughing at my own joke.
It's really hard to like even imagine it because so my sister went back to Sri Lanka recently and she found all our childhood books and she found this biology textbook where she was like, I brought this back because it's the place where I actually learned about sex because we didn't have like until you got to your GCSE level, they didn't teach you about sex. Like,
really?
We didn't have sex education. So and it's
so
funny,
where was this? Bahrain?
In Sri Lanka.
Okay.
And then I picked up this book and I was like, holy fuck, like this is exactly the book where even I learned about sex.
So yeah. How old were you?
I did my GCSEs when I was like 13, I think.
Shit.
Isn't that normal?
Yeah, no, that's
no,
15.
That's 15. 15. 15. See, this is why the international community are beating us. Yeah, they learn about sex later, but they're doing GCSEs earlier.
No, but then we like learned about the biological process that is like making... like human life.
Mm.
But I remember as a child reading this book and like being like, oh, this is interesting that like penises and vaginas have other uses because nobody told us this.
So can you say again, imagine you're reading the books.
Well, it said something like, this is etched into my brain. The man puts his erect penis into the woman's vagina. Sperm is ejaculates from the man's penis into the woman's vagina and it like swims up the uterus into the fallopian tubes and fertilizes an egg.
Can you do that in a sexy voice?
No, don't, because I'm going to put R. Kelly under all of this. So having that difference, like from somewhere that's quite conservative coming over here, and did that take you a long time to adjust in how you were thinking about talking, even being able to communicate parts of what you were thinking?
Yeah, definitely. So like, because when I first moved here for uni, and obviously everyone's like getting off at everyone at uni, and I, for me, that was like a, that was part of, that was part, form part of my culture shock. where I was like, I am not used to people just be like having casual sex.
Yeah.
Especially for me, that was a very young age for people to be having sex.
Mm.
And so it was very difficult for me even talk about it. And, you know, I remember like not, like my friends would try and like when they tried to talk about sex, I would just avoid. I was so awkward about it.
Yeah.
And then now like all I talk about is like sex.
I was going to say, cause as long as I've known you.
like every stand-up routine is me talking about sex.
So we're like, wow. So you must have gone through like an amazing process there. Sort of being able to understand more about yourself and having that sort of introspection.
Yeah, but I had to I had to go through that process of, you know, culture shock and then all these different emotions coming to me and then manifesting as like a form of depression. And I was so depressed. Like my uni days were some of my darkest days.
How long did that last for?
A few years, because I was really happy for the first 6 months I was in the UK, and then suddenly, bam! I was like, I hate everything. Like, I don't belong here. I don't belong in myself. I don't understand what myself. I don't understand my own emotions, because we didn't talk about sexuality. We didn't talk about sex. We didn't talk about all of these things that were kind of coming at me at such speed.
You said it, not us. But I think the good point.
Do you think counselling helped? Like going to
counselling. So the first lot of counselling helped me to just get past that shame, and just be like, acknowledge that something is wrong. Acknowledge that it's having a really, really bad impact on you, sometimes even physically, and do something about it. And so that helped me get past that barrier of going to counselling. But I didn't really do it properly at uni, and it's only after I left, and when I went back to counselling again, then I did it properly. I was like, I'm going to go for my appointments, and I'm going to go for the therapy, and I'm going to do the things that they're trying to help me with.
Yeah, exactly. You can do it, like, you can start, stop as many times as once. There's no, like, right way of doing it. It's just actually eventually.
And also that helped me realise that just because you do counselling doesn't mean you're fixed, you know? And I think that was like a misconception that I had, and probably from like seeing people go for therapy on TV. Oh my God, they're fixed. Like, I really thought I could go for counselling once or twice and they'll fix me. And then that realisation that no, this is like a journey that you have to take with you for maybe the rest of your life.
So guys, we've come to the end of the program. I think a great way to round it off would be hearing, what would you tell yourselves 10 years ago?
Mine would be just keep going for therapy. And also the one thing I've realized is that I would tell myself that it will always get better. But the thing is, when you go through those ups, when you go through the downs, it's always hard. No matter how many times you've been through it or through therapy, when you go through the downs, it's hard to tell yourself that it's going to get better. But reminding myself that it has gotten better in the past helps me.
Mm.
What about you, Sahel?
I would say don't give a shit what people think. You know, just focus on you and try and be do good in your own life and to your mates and that, and people you love, and then don't worry about the rest of it.
Guys, I think those are some really beautiful points. Those answers are, of course, wrong. The correct answer is invest in Bitcoin. Invest in Bitcoin quickly.
Buy Bitcoin.
I don't understand Bitcoin.
I've been Alex, and I've been joined by Sahel and Oz.
Yo, yo.
See you later.
Peace.
And this has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.